to Titus chapter 1 as we continue to look at the local church. We've been looking at the local church. We have looked at make sure that we had the right gospel. Make sure that it's the biblical gospel, the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus Christ by faith, our faith and His grace alone, nothing more, and of course nothing less. And there are so many counterfeit gospels out there today. We talked about needing not only the right gospel, but the right leadership as well. And we began a study on the really qualifications of a pastor, although we're looking primarily in the book of Titus to find those. We spent some time talking about a husband and one wife. We talked about their children. And we talked about how it changed from elders to bishop. And really, we talked about all three of the names used for that single office: the pastor, the bishop, the overseer, and the elder. The counselor, if you will. And we want to look now at verse 7 of Titus chapter 1. It says, "For a bishop must be blameless." We said that's the overarching idea, and then he's going to give several ideas on how this bishop can remain blameless. He said, as it says, as the steward of God. And we're going to stop right there, the steward of God. Now, when we get to the other qualifications, I expect to go a little bit faster, but going right into missions conference a week from today, I couldn't help but stop and talk about stewardship. Certainly, it is a qualification of the pastor, but really, the pastor is just merely an example to the flock. It's not as though the pastor is to be the steward or a good steward, and everyone else can just spend their money however they want. Can you turn me down just a little bit on that? Just a little bit less on that. Thank you. How many of you have ever been to a restaurant where you walk in and it is just filthy? The workers are disheveled. It looks like the last thing on their mind right now is customer service. Have you ever experienced that? And your thought is, should I turn away now? I'm already here. I'm hungry. I'm going to have to drive somewhere else. I'm going to have to wait somewhere else. And you just think, all right, I'm just going to go through with it. And you get your food and the order's half wrong. And it's just a terrible dining experience. It's terrible. And maybe you've gone to a place where you've enjoyed the dining experience. And you walk in, it's clean, it's inviting. It seems like every employee wants to make your dining experience a memorable one in a good way. And you just think, this is wonderful. The food is what you ordered. It's good. And everything seems to work out. I'll tell you, I think of two examples right here in Shelby. I think about, they're both fast food places, McDonald's and Chick-fil-A. And I'd rather spend a whole lot more money, because they ask a whole lot more money at Chick-fil-A than go to McDonald's, okay? Listen, what's the difference between a one-star review and going to some place that you want to go back to? I'll just tell you, McDonald's has a better location. It's a whole lot easier to get in and out of McDonald's. They have better access. I think about the prices. There's no doubt in my mind that McDonald's charges less for their food. Chick-fil-A has a high, I'll just tell you, they like their food almost as much as I do, okay? They like to charge for their food. It's cheaper at McDonald's. I mean, we could spend really the rest of the evening talking about the difference between the two stores. What I want you to see, it's not the menu. It's really not even the employees, but I will tell you this, it all rests on management. The one thing that has changed with, the one that is charged with running a store, I believe if Mickey D's had an experienced and seasoned and a manager that knew exactly what they were doing, they could turn that store around. I mean, you think about it, they did tear the store entirely down and rebuild it from the ground up. And I still wouldn't go there to eat, okay? Now, listen, I usually am not that critical, but I've had enough experiences there to just teach me eat. If they could just get their morning bagel, I'd still go back for that thing, all right? But I say all this to say management is the key. Now, what is the manager? The manager is not the one that owns the store, but they are charged with taking care of the store. They're the ones that are charged with making sure they get employees. They're going to show up that is going to pay a wage and make sure that people are working when they're supposed to and doing what they're supposed to and managing the store. That's what it means, right? Now, I understand certainly the owners of that store are going to put certain qualifications on that manager, but he or she is responsible inside the guidelines that are given to do the best job for the owners that they can do. That's the job. Can I tell you, that's probably one of the modern-day illustrations of stewardship that I can think of today. Because that manager is tasked with stewarding the resources that are at his or her hand in order to maximize, for in this instance, the profit of the profitability of the store. And so if that's not happening, oftentimes you want to find somebody that can manage. But you got to pay them probably more than what they're paying over there. So oftentimes it's not even what's in the handbook, the store handbook. Really, what it all rests on is what the manager allows. And so if you have a manager that says, we can have a dirty parking lot, or listen, we're too busy to clean the dining area, or whatever decisions that they're making, if they are unwilling to task their people and use the resources that they have for the benefit of the company, you're going to have a place that nobody wants to go to. And so I just think in this idea of stewardship, it is easy for us then to think about how that manager is failing, but I want you to think for a second and ask yourself this: if you are a manager, how are you doing with the resources that God has given you? Would God give you a one-star review, or he'd say, listen, I can entrust that person with more because they're using it in a way that that is glorifying to me? I'll tell you, that is a very, very important question. Not just in light of our missions conference, in which we ought to stop and consider our stewardship and what God's given us. But listen, on a daily basis, we need to be reminded. C.S. Lewis, which I don't quote very often, but he has this right on. He says, every faculty you have, your power of thinking or moving your limbs from moment to moment, is given you by God. If you devoted every moment of your whole life exclusively to his service, you could not give him anything that was not, in a sense, his own already. I want to give you just a couple of principles of stewardship tonight. And certainly I want you to see how it relates to the qualification of a pastor, but do not miss the fact that if the pastor is to be an example to the flock, then these qualifications are things that ought to be manifest in your life as well. I want you to see the principle of identifiability. You say, what is that? I had to look long and hard for that word. Identifiability. I had to practice saying it too before I got up here. What it means? It means we're going to have to identify what belongs to us and what belongs to God. Now, I've got good news. The good news is this: whatever belongs to you, you're able to use however you want. I mean, you can spend whatever you want, your time, your resources, your effort, your energy, whatever belongs to you, you can just spend wastefully if you want to. However you want to spend it, you can spend it. But if that is your thinking, I've got bad news for you. And it is simply this: the earth is the Lord's, and the fullness thereof, the world and they that dwell therein. Psalm 24:1. And the honest truth is, the good news is that God does own it all. It says that the earth is his. If I had a pillow, you ever stuff a pillow? You have either down feathers, or they don't have that very much anymore. They have all these styrofoam or whatever kind of pillows they're supposed to. Memory foam is what they call it, right? You lay on it and your memory just goes away. That's what I've heard. And so if you have a pillow and you're stuffing that, and you say this pillow is mine and all that's therein, is there any part of that pillow that's not yours? Well, you say, what about the end? No, it says all of the pillow and everything therein. Listen, when God says that the world is his and the fullness thereof, he's saying everything that is inside the world is belonging to God. I mean, you could go right back to Genesis 1 where it says that he created everything. That's why he owns it all. We don't own anything. The simple or the most fundamental basic principle of biblical stewardship is this: that God owns everything. And we are simply managers or administrators acting, listen, not on our behalf, but acting on his behalf. That's the most fundamental principle of stewardship. And so when we identify, or the identifiability principle is that we don't own anything. It all belongs to God. The steward was often a slave who was capable and able and was, by his wealthy master, placed over estates to manage it and perhaps many other slaves under him. Turn your Bibles, hold your place here if you want, but turn your Bibles back to Luke chapter 16. Luke chapter 16. We're going to read the first couple of verses. Now listen, we're not going to exegete this passage. We're not going to talk about why the steward was doing what he was going to do. You say, what is he talking about here? Well, let's read it, and I'll tell you what the truth is that we need to see from this passage. And he said unto his disciples, this is the Lord speaking, there was a certain rich man which had a steward, and the same was accused unto him that he wasted his goods. And he called him and said unto him, how is it that I hear of thee? Give an account of thy stewardship, for thou mayest be no longer steward. Then the steward said within himself, what shall I do? For my Lord taketh away from me the stewardship. I cannot dig to beg. I am ashamed. I am resolved what to do, that when I am put out of the stewardship, they may receive me into their houses. So he called every one of his Lord's debtors unto him, and said unto the first, how much owest thou unto my Lord? And he said, 100 measures of oil. And he said unto him, take thy bill, and sit down quickly, and write 50. Then said he to another, and how much owest thou? And he said, 100 measures of wheat. And he said unto him, take thy bill and write 80. And the Lord commended the unjust steward because he had done wisely, for the children of this world are in their generation wiser than the children of light. All right, so we're not going to take time to break that down. The one thing I want you to see is that the shock of this story is not found in the authority that the steward had to do those things. The shocking part of the story is that he would do that. Do you understand? The fact that he would sell all of these things at half price, basically. Not that he had the authority to do those. You say, what are you getting at? What I'm getting at is Jesus is using a common, everyday illustration that people would understand. He is the master storyteller. And here he is telling somebody that this steward was doing these things. They didn't say, how dare he? He doesn't have the authority to do that. That's not the point of the parable. And so we understand that a steward is someone that had the authority of the affairs of his master to even go out and reduce the debt that his debtors owed him. That's tremendous authority. And we better be careful that we're not abusing the authority that God has given us over the things that he has entrusted to us. So stewardship expresses our obedience regarding the administration of everything God has placed under our control, which, by the way, is all-encompassing. Stewardship is the commitment of oneself and possessions to God's service, recognizing that we do not have the right of control over our property or ourselves. I don't know about you, but if you've ever made a major purpose and you're praying about what God would have you to get, maybe it's a car, maybe it's a house, do you ever just pray and ask God that he will use this for his glory? Whether it's a car and you're going to go somewhere listen, Lord, maybe I'm going to take somebody to church, or maybe I'm going to use this on soul winning and whatever it is, but you're saying, Lord, I want to use this thing for your glory. It belongs to you. Find a way to use it. The same thing with your house. Have you ever dedicated your house to the Lord's service to say, listen, whatever you want me to do here, we're gonna do that. If you want us to have people over or whatever it is, Lord, I just want to sanctify, I just want to dedicate this to you. But the honest truth is, it's already his. Well, all you're doing is recognizing his ownership in that thing. And that's how it should be, but not just with large purchases like a house or a car, but everything that we have needs to be a reflection of who he is and allowing us to use it then for his glory. You see, there is no, I have this that I can use for myself. Now, is it wrong to buy something? It is if God has told you not to. That's all I'm saying, is we need to go to God and say, Lord, do you want me to spend your money on this? Because that's not how we act. The first thing, we ought to take a step back, by the way, and say, God, should I get this? And if he says, you don't have anything in your bank account, and you say, I've got a credit card, I can tell you what his answer is already. The answer is no. Ask him for it if you think you need it. And let him give it to you. Don't let MasterCard give it to you. Don't let your Visa card be your God. Don't go in debt to get something that God could provide for you if you would go to him. You say, well, I work hard for my money. I get up every day and I go to work, and at the end of the week, listen, I didn't tell him I just volunteered. I get a paycheck because I earned it. And I think a lot of people have that mentality. But I tell you this, in Deuteronomy, we're reminded that that thou shalt remember the Lord thy God, for it is he that giveth thee power to get wealth, that he may establish his covenant which he sware unto thy fathers as it is this day. And what is the principle? The principle is that the very strength that you have to go out and get a paycheck is because God has given it to you. And so this principle of identifiability just means we need to identify everything as belonging to God. What else? How about the principle of responsibility? The principle of responsibility. We're called as God's stewards to manage that which belongs to God. Now, isn't it wonderful? I'm just telling you how wonderful our God is. Does he give you your needs and that's it? Now, he's promised that he'll give you your needs. Is that right? He's going to give you food, clothing, raiment, that's a covering, perhaps even meaning a shelter. He's given that promise to you that he's not going to leave you starved and destitute, okay? But if you really only got what you needed, you'd not be wearing the clothes that you're wearing tonight. You'd not be living in the house that you're living tonight. You'd not be driving the car that you're driving tonight. All I'm saying is God gives us so much more than we deserve, and we get really so much more than what we just need. How dare we be unthankful, by the way, for the things that we do have? 1 Timothy 6:17 says, charge them that are rich in this world. Let me just stop there for just a second. That's you and me. See, I don't feel very rich. I'm going to tell you, you're a one percenter in the rest of this world. Even if you don't have a couch, you're still a one percenter. It says, charge them that are rich in this world. So don't stop and think in your mind, this is to Bill Gates or this is to Warren Buffett or this is to the Facebook guy or the Amazon guy that are the billionaires. The Trumps of the world, yeah, they're rich according to our standard, but I'm just going to tell you, we have more in our house than probably half the world could even imagine or dream about. And I'm talking about a refrigerator or a freezer or a bed with a box spring. And we got to get buildings to hold our stuff because our house can't hold it anymore. I'm just saying, really, you need to see yourself as rich. I heard a pastor use this illustration. He said, what is being rich? Having more than what you need. It's the leftover from what you actually need. We have leftovers. In America, we are very, very blessed. But it doesn't start there. He says, charge them that are rich in this world that they be not high-minded, nor trust in uncertain riches, but in the living God. Now listen, this is wonderful. who give us richly all things to enjoy. That's how good our God is to us. Do you understand that? That gives means to supply or grant. It does not mean transfer ownership. No, there's a totally another word that is used when somebody gives something and transfers ownership. The same word is used when somebody smacks you in the cheek and you're to offer up the other cheek. You're not giving them that cheek, but you're letting them use it for the other hand, okay? It is a temporary use. But he says he gives us those things for our enjoyment. Aren't you glad that you can have a great time as a Christian? Listen, we like to go camping, and when it gets a little colder out, we've even rented a boat to go just an afternoon where the kids can feel the wind hitting their face, you know. Those are incredible things that we've enjoyed, that God has given us as a blessing, because we have a good and loving and gracious and merciful God. We don't deserve it. I didn't stand in line and say, God, listen, I'm waiting for all these blessings. You've told us that you're going to load us down daily with benefits. Where are they? That's the wrong mentality, but I feel that we have a welfare mentality as Christians, because when things aren't going our way, we say, woe is me, and we're so ungrateful for the things that God has given to us. But I want you to understand that we are responsible not only to be thankful, but to use them for His glory. It's the principle of responsibility. Isn't it true that at the end of your life, you want to hear those wonderful words, well done, thou good and faithful, what? Servant. Thou hast been faithful over a few things, I'll make thee ruler over many things. Enter thou into the joy of the Lord. Let me tell you, if you are squandering the resources that God has given you, do not think that you're going to hear those words. When I say resources, I'm not talking about just money. We often use the three T's, right? The time, the talents, and the treasure. And maybe they're used so much because they're so true. We have the principle of identifiability, the principle of responsibility, and the principle of accountability. In this, I mean accountability, the way we have in our church financial statements every month. I knew of a church that the church did not know how much the pastor was making. They didn't know how much the assistants were making. And let me tell you, they were almost making six figures. And it was a terrible, terrible situation. I think there ought to be some accountability. But do you realize then, if there is accountability for the pastor and as an example to the flock, there ought to be some accountability between a husband and a wife on where that money is going. And if a husband is spending money and the wife doesn't know where the paycheck's going, there's a problem there. And likewise, if the wife is going out and spending money and breaking the budget, there's a problem there. They have to work together. There's an accountability. You are accountable to each other, but ultimately you're accountable to God for how you're spending that money. By the way, we've been spending some money lately at the church. We've been spending money on maintenance items. We want to be a good steward of the facilities that God has given to us, not just the building we hope to get, but the building that we still are in. But we are spending some money on that building over there as well. We just got enough flooring to floor the entire education building, really for the price that it would have cost to do one floor. The Lord has been very gracious in how He has provided for the materials over there. And we got, what was it, $25,000 or $30,000 worth of lighting for $1,500, and He's given us about $16,000 or $20,000 worth of flooring for about $6,000 or $7,000. It's just been amazing to see how He has continued to supply for that over there. And so we want you to know where your money... Wait. It's not yours, though, is it? We do want you to know where God's money's going. It's not a secret. We want to be transparent. We want you to know. We have a budget, an annual budget every year. You ought to know what that is. We have an annual budget, and you know, we have different categories that things are spent. We see the spending reports on a monthly basis. We just paid for the flooring, as I mentioned, and it's just, we want it transparency. Listen, God has blessed financially over the course of the last several years, and we praise the Lord for that. And that's exactly how I look at it, as His blessing. You know what it means? It means that God's people are giving. Now, I also want to talk about one last principle, because there's something that kind of goes between the principle of accountability and the principle of credibility. You say, what is that when it talks about steward? Steward takes a term that is used of someone who is responsible for managing or administrating something. We've laid that foundation as a household or an estate, but here we're talking about a congregation or a church, which is, in a sense, God's household, if you will. So how does an elder slash bishop, as it mentions here in Titus, gain credibility with his stewardship? Well, I think there's two main ways that I can think of. Number one is you look at their personal life. I know when I was candidating for this position, the pulpit committee did a pretty extensive background check, if I recall. One of the things they were looking for, besides criminal records and things like that, I would imagine, I never asked, but was any bankruptcies that I might have filed? What's their credit score? How does this person handle his finances? You say, why is that? It's been wisely said that how a pastor runs his personal finances is how he's going to lead the church. I think it's accurate. And so if he has a minimum monthly payment mentality at home, you can guarantee that the church is going to be stretched all the time. Now, there are exceptions, I'm sure, to that rule. But secondly, not only look at his personal life, watch and see how he leads the church. You may think, I don't have access to his personal finances. I don't know how he is with his own money. Then watch the trends of the church. Be engaged with the financial reports. Understand the annual budget and how the monies are dispersed. You see, a steward does not own but manages all that his master puts into his hand. So what is the principle then? If you have a steward, and I'm now moving from just the pastor now, just the elder, to those that are members of the church, okay, because we're all stewards, remember. But if God looks down, or if you are a business owner, if I go back to my first illustration, and I see a manager that's getting the job done, am I going to give them more responsibility or less? Am I going to give them more pay or less? You're going to reward those that are utilizing the resources for the benefit of the company. Now, again, I'm not likening the church to a company, and I'm not a CEO, and I don't think any pastor ought to act like a CEO, but I am using that as an illustration of stewardship, even for individuals. So as God looks down and he says, listen, there is somebody that is being faithful to the with the resources that I have given them, with their time, with the abilities and the talents that I've given them, with the money and the resources and everything that I've given them, they are honoring and glorifying me with. I think I can trust them with some more resources. Listen, if you have a hold on your things like this, how can God ever place anything else in your hands? But if you say, God, it's all yours, you know what? Listen, I believe there are some, I don't believe, the Bible is clear, that some have the spiritual gift of giving. Where do they get their resources? God knows they can trust them with that resources because they're going to distribute it as he sees fit, not as they see fit. But if you think to yourself, there's no way I can afford to give, there will never be a way that you will be able to afford to give. Not in your own thinking, I'm saying. I think that this idea, I asked our treasurer one time, I don't know who gives, I don't write the checks, I don't cut the checks, I don't look at the checks, I get a statement once a week to see what the giving was for that week from the bank. It's just, it's not detailed at all. It says this is how much cash, this is how much checks, and this is the total amount. If you ask Brother Hankey, he'll tell you, I don't even open up the envelope all the way, I just look at the very bottom. I want the bottom line on that thing. I just want to see what it is. And I'll tell you, I've asked him before, what percentage of our church gives? And I don't remember what he said exactly. It was probably higher than the national average, I would think. But I don't get overly exuberant about that because I want 100% participation. You say, why is that? Because you want more money? Well, be love to be able to reach the gospel with more people. There's no doubt about that. But that's not really the issue, is it? The issue is, who has your heart? Matthew 6:21 and Luke 12:34 both say the exact same thing. For where your treasure is, there will be your heart also. Or there will your heart be also, excuse me. So who has your heart? Who owns your things? Is it you or is it God? Let me ask you this. What do you think is the number one character trait that a steward or a manager should have? Do you think it ought to be excellent financial suave? You know how to invest money and get a return on the investment. Make sure that all of the checkbooks are lining up and make sure that we're not going into debt and make sure. Listen, that's a help. But I'll tell you this, it's not the key characteristic trait that God gives for a steward. You ought to stay on top of your checkbook, all right? But that's not the key ingredient. What about great administrative skills? Listen, a good manager is going to be able to administrate to some degree. Some are better at it than others. There's no doubt about that. But that's not the key thing. Not according to 1 Corinthians 4:2. The Bible says, moreover, it is required in stewards that a man be found faithful. Faithfulness. It's not just the pastor that's to be found faithful with the resources that God has given to the church, although that is certainly true. Okay, I'm not diminishing that at all. That's absolutely true. But the truth of that is true for each and every one of us in here tonight. The pastor can never say, this is mine, because all that he has comes from God. But the same is true for every person under the sound of my voice tonight. John 3:27 says, a man can receive nothing except to be given him from heaven. And so everything that we have must be used for God. Our time, our possessions, our ambitions, our talents are really all given to us by the Lord. And we must be faithful then to honor Him, to build His church. And so we ought to all be faithful. Let me give you one last summary. Stewardship defines our practical obedience in the administration of everything under our control. Everything entrusted to us. It is the consecration of one's self and possessions to God's service. And so all stewardship is doing is acknowledging in practice what we say we believe about our belongings. That we don't have the right of control ourselves or our property, but God has control. So all we are managers of that which belongs to God, and we ought to be under His constant authority as we are administrating His affairs. And maybe you've never thought about it that way, but faithful stewardship means that we fully acknowledge that we are not our own, but we belong to Christ, who gave Himself for us. So the ultimate question is, am I the Lord of my life? Or is Christ the Lord of my life? Because if He's Lord, you'll understand you're just a manager. But if you're Lord, you're the king of your own resources. We're going to study in the coming weeks 11 different qualities. 5 are stated negatively, and 6 are stated positively. But I think one of the most important ones is that idea of stewardship. Not just because it's important for a church, but because it's so important for everyone to recognize God's ownership of everything we have. Be a good manager, a good steward of what God has given you.